Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. Today we are discussing Craving in His Blood by Zoe Draven. I'm going to start with our characters and location, and Marissa will pick up with our plot. So our main character is Millicent. She also goes by Millie. She is the main female lead. She's described multiple times as not being attractive, but she's got a great personality. She's resilient, a hard worker, a great chef, and she's empathetic. She's traveled extensively with her adoptive father, who was also a chef. He recently died off-planet, and she's now trying to raise enough money to bring his body back so that his soul stone can be created and he can rest with his long-lost love, Ruoth. She currently works in a restaurant that serves Kylor and serves them both. The restaurant serves both food and blood. Her manager is Lizana. And she's become kind of close with her, but she's especially close to one of the blood givers, Grace. Then we have Kythel. He's the main male lead. He's the Kaiser of Erzos. Although his dream was to be an architect, he keeps himself very controlled and does not have the best reputation. However, he truly cares for the people of Erzos and is doing his best to advance society. He carries a lot of guilt for the death of his mother and his aunt. He is Azur's twin, who is the main character in the last book and mated with a human named Gemma. He has many other siblings, who all hold various positions of power. The two that appear most frequently in this book are Thane and Kaldor. And for location, the book takes place in Erzos on the planet of Kryn.
Okay. So Millie Saren works as a server and chef in Rana Dayan, which is a restaurant sort of where the Kylor can come for a meal, whether it's actual food or blood, in the region of Erzos. And her father moved to Kylor recently, but her father died off planet 4 months ago, and she is now saving every credit to pay to have his body returned to Kylor quickly. While working one evening, she serves Kythel, the Kaiser of Erzos, and Kythel is instantly drawn to her. Though she is, quote, no great beauty, she smells amazing to him, and he asks Millie's boss, Lizana, if she can provide him with blood. Lizana perceives Kythel's interest in Millie and is threatened by it, as Kythel has recently made plans with Lizana's family, House Arata, to propose to her cousin Lyris, which would secure a lot of clout for House Arata and a lot of Drava, which is a very strong metal for weapons, for Kythel and the armies of the Kalium, because war is on the horizon for the Kylor. Though Lysana makes Millie promise not to share her blood with Kythel, they are still drawn to each other and run into each other in a forest named Stellara, where Millie works to restore the cabin that her father shared with his lost love, Ruala, a long time ago. Millie and Kythel have another run-in outside of her workplace and are caught kissing by her boss. They separate, and Lizana slaps Millie and fires her, leaving her homeless and jobless. Panicked, Millie does the only thing she can think of to ensure her father's body gets returned to Kylor, or to Kryn. She offers to be Kythel's blood servant if he will bring her father's body back. So he accepts and arranges for her father's body to be returned. However, Kythel realizes that Millie is his Karana, his blood mate. And though her blood will taste incredible to him, and the loss of her will destroy a part of him, staying with her will jeopardize his arrangement with House Arata and potentially compromise his access to the weapons his country will need for the oncoming war. He agrees to allow Millie to serve him for a month, but as time passes and their feelings grow stronger, It becomes clear that letting go of each other will not be a simple task for Millie or Kaithal. What will they do? Spoilers abound.
So this is your second read of this book, right?
It was. Yep.
Cool.
Zoe Draven writes the best books. She's my favorite sci-fi romance writer. She just is so good at writing like the perfect amount of angst with the romance. She's just so good at it.
I know. I love it. And I think, so I was thinking this when I read it about the angst, is that so we've definitely had books where there's too much angst. Like, and it takes up the whole thing and it ruins everything. But so what she does is that even though there's a lot of angst, right, she manages to split it up so that's like really like maybe like an angsty paragraph and then like things happen. Interesting things happen. There are conversations. So even though it happens a lot, it's not the focal point, which I think is the difference between some books that are just angsty, like really angsty, is that it ends up being the focal point of the whole book.
The way that she writes these stories, I don't know. I'll just find myself crying and thinking like, oh, why? But because of the way that she writes this angst, like you just get so sucked in. You get so enmeshed in and invested in the relationships between the characters. So I've read several of her books where things have happened between the male and female main characters, and I'm just like, you know, weeping and confused about why that's happening, but she's just so good at writing that.
She is. She's one author that I never hesitate to pick up a book with. Like when we decided to do this, you'd already read it, and I was like, this will be totally fine. Like I had, it was, ne there was no, like I knew I was going to pick up this book and I was going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm confident in any book I pick up by her that I'm going to enjoy it.
You will have a good time.
Yes.
Yep.
One of the things that I really liked about this book, and I guess the series, is that she gave the alien or the aliens all of the sexy features. Like,
Yes.
they've got horns, they've got wings, they've got pointy ears, they've got fangs, they've got all of it, except for a tail. Unless I missed the tail.
No, they don't have a tail.
So,
Unfortunate. I
yeah.
don't
Oh, they've
think.
got the knot. They have a knot.
Yeah, they have a knot.
Like, she's just like, I'm gonna give them everything. All of the sexy things.
All of our favorite things except the tail. I don't think they have a tail. It's not mentioned in this book. Yeah, I think we call them space vampires when we talked about the first book. I still picture the hot gargoyle from the Gargoyles cartoon, which they're developing into a live action movie. Did you know?
I did not know. That'll be
Yeah.
interesting.
It's gonna be uncomfortable. Like for me to be that aroused about gargoyles in public, but I'm gonna go.
You know, there is this TikTok about how people are attracted to the saber-toothed tiger in
Oh,
Ice Age.
really?
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I kind of get it. I could see that. Okay.
Interesting.
That makes me think of the gargoyle thing. Like these anthropomorphized animals. Or, yeah. One of the other things that I like that she does is she connects all of her series, or not necessarily connects them, has a little bit of a throwback.
Yeah, she makes a nod to them.
Yeah, and I like that. Like she mentions Everton, but she does say New Everton, not Old Everton. And I don't remember in the Crave series if there was that, if something happened. I don't know the difference between the two. I know they were on Everton.
Yeah.
And then Millie dated, I want to call them Luxurians. I don't think that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
A dated one, like said, oh, and on her travels she dated him. That's a throwback to the, I think her very first series. I think that was her very first series. Or at least first one I read.
I think there's also a nod to the Horde Kings. I could be wrong. I know in the last book there was a nod to the Horde Kings as well, which is my favorite series. I think that she makes a comment about them in this book too. I also appreciate that the way that she kind of weaves little pieces of them into her different series. It's nice to see, you know, because when you I love the Horde King series, but I've liked every book that she's written, and so it's kind of like saying hello to your friends when you read those little bits. It's like, oh yeah, they're all still part of the same world, just different planets. It's pretty cool. I do like with this series, we get to see some complex sibling roles. We saw some of this play out in the first book too, and then in this book we have Kythel, which is the second oldest child in this family and a twin. His older brother Azor is who was in the last book, and Kythel's story is really interesting because he always knew that his brother would be like a leader, and so he decided to pursue his dream of being an architect until his aunt was murdered, and he had to pivot, in part because of shame and guilt, feeling like her death was part of his fault, and not helped in that by his mother also blaming him for that. So he became the sibling who shoulders the responsibility for the success of the whole family. He gave up a lot of himself, for duty, because he made a promise to his mother that he would after his aunt died. And so we kind of see, you know, how in the last book we saw how the death of their aunt affected his twin, but also I think that this is something that we'll continue to see as we move through the other books in this series, how they were all affected by this. And I like that because that's how trauma unfolds in real life, right? It affects everybody in different ways, and people will experience different feelings, sometimes guilt and regret and shame, as a result of that. And what I also like with that is that we see his older brother versus his twin showing up to support him at the end of this book and to have those conversations with him where he says, like, hey, this was not your fault. This was a war crime, and nobody could have predicted this. So I really liked their relationship between, you know, it's a romance, and I like the romantic elements, but I also like the like sibling relationship stuff that we get to see too.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I felt so bad for him because his mom at some point said it was his fault.
Yeah, that
Like,
was
just,
terrible.
I know, just, it wasn't even like a hint. She just straight up said, "This is your fault." She
Right.
later apologized for it, but really, that doesn't leave you.
Didn't change it, didn't make it
No.
any better for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't. So that whole situation was really terrible too, because his mom blamed Kythel for her sister's death, Aina. Aina is the aunt that died. And she blames him because he wasn't there. She was on like a diplomatic mission, and Kythel wasn't there with her. And so, in his mother's mind, Kythel being present could have prevented Aina being murdered, but Kythel could have just as easily been murdered with her. Right? She was trapped. They cut off her wings and they shot her.
Yeah. He would have died too.
Yeah.
He would have been killed too. I mean,
You could what if that thing, that situation all day long? What if he had been there? What if she hadn't gone in the first place? I mean, it was unfair of her to put that burden on him, and then also continues to be unfair for their father to reinforce that, which he does. His name is Thran, and he sucks.
that made me so mad that so yeah, they had the so it's towards the end of the book, right, where he contacts his father, or his father contacts him because he's losing his shit because, you know, he and Millie have basically broken up. And when his father gets on, he's like, "I don't care that you found your mate. You're not gonna, I don't care." And then he brings back the mom and aunt. And I was just like, seriously? Terrible.
Yeah. When he could just as easily come back and do, like, he could do his job. He's the one that left, and he's the reason why his children are now doing the jobs that they have, why they split their territory up. I think, if I'm remembering that correctly, he left after his wife died because it was really painful. And it was great that his kids chose to step up and do that, I guess. But you don't get to, like, run the show when you give up your role. So he was a dick. He was such a dick. He was like, he made a comment about how having a mate means nothing. And Kaisel says, "How could you know? You didn't have one. You never found yours."
Yeah, and he says, "Oh, well, I loved your mother, but it's just
Yeah, they had an
like,
arranged marriage. They weren't mated. Like, yeah, you loved her. Can you take that and amplify it by like 1,000,000,000%? Because that's what a mate bond is like." I think it's really interesting because usually mate bonds are things that are like highly respected.
yeah. I mean, with his brothers and everything, they were like, "Oh, you found your mate. Like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna be with her, right?"
Yeah.
And, he was like, "No, my responsibility lies with the people, and
Yeah.
I need to make a good match." But they were all like, they seemed to be like, if they had found their mates, they would have definitely
Yeah.
just gone with it. So speaking, I guess, of family, or wait, what did you have? What were you gonna
I was
say?
gonna say, speaking of fathers, do you have some feelings about Millie's dad?
I did. So there was just one thing that she brought up that bothered me with him, was that it sounded like, maybe I misread it, but he made her promise to stay on Kylor so that when she died, right, she could have a soul stone made and they could be reunited. And I can understand that. It's very religious-y sounding to me, right?
Yeah.
So I can understand it's sort of like, "Oh, I want you to get into the kingdom of heaven, so please do this." But she found a place where she was really happy, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of the place right now. But she was at peace there. She was enjoying it. She wanted to stay there. And I don't know. I really didn't like that. I feel like I would be really hurt and annoyed if my parents said that to me.
Right. Part of that also is there's some ambiguity on whether or not humans
Yeah.
will actually like go to, I forget what it's called, their afterlife. Because there are three realms that they can go to in their afterlife. And there's some ambiguity on whether or not humans actually do that, or if it's just a Kylor thing.
He seemed like a good father otherwise.
Yes, he sounded very supportive, and it sounded like they had a great working relationship. She talks about how he didn't care how things looked, he cared how things tasted. And so he would make these things that tasted amazing but looked like hot garbage. And so they worked together. He would create the things, and she would make them pretty. Presentation. So it sounded like they had a good working relationship and just a good relationship overall. Like he really loved her and she really loved him as well. But I agree, your point. If I were her, I would have asked, why couldn't we have moved here way sooner if this is what you wanted?
I don't know if you picked up on this, or it was just a vibe that I got. It was very Romeo and Juliet, his relationship, I felt like, with Ruala.
Yeah.
Right, it was. Maybe it's so Grace mentioned earlier in the book that they were star-crossed lovers.
Yeah.
And
There's a literal Shakespeare reference too. That's,
is there, wait, where? I feel like I may have highlighted it, actually.
yeah. Grace makes a comment after she's read the letters that they sent to each other. Where, well, not to each other. She reads Millie's dad's letters that he had intended to send to Ruala and never sent. And she makes a reference where she brings up that they're star-crossed lovers, but she references Shakespeare. when she brings that up.
Okay. Well, then there you go. That put my mind on it clearly.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was because it was just so sad. Rhaella poisoned herself eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the Shakespeare vibes too. I think it's interesting. She really dives into that star-crossed lovers thing when she's explaining it to Millie, which I had never really considered before, the difference between being a star-crossed lover and a star-aligned lover.
Yeah.
I hadn't really considered the difference there and how star-crossed means your paths cross but don't like go in the same directions. Whereas star aligned, you're on the same path. I just thought star-crossed lovers. Oh, that sounds romantic. Turns out it's pretty tragic.
I'd never thought of it that way either.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tis interesting. Where was that in ninth grade English lit? I had some conflicting feelings about Millie. There were a few times when I didn't find her especially likable, and then other times when I found her really relatable. I feel like she's in a really difficult position with navigating the death of her father and the grief that comes with the loss of your parent, but also your only living relative while being on a new planet that you moved to with them and believing that they were going to be with you. So being a new person on a new planet, the anxiety of not being able to afford to get his body back, being homeless, like she had a lot going on. And so there are times when we see her being like really confident and self-assured, and then other times where I'm just like, you need a counselor, ma'am. So again, relatable. I loved the plot point with her cleaning up her father and Ruella's cabin, like as her mission to find herself and to reconnect with her father.
Yes, that was so sweet. I liked that a lot. And she found his cloak there and everything with the pin. Ugh.
Yeah.
And it is such a good way to like honor someone. I am just curious how she knew how to basically rebuild a cabin.
Maybe they have YouTube-like websites on Kylor that she can figure out how to, because you can learn how to build a house on YouTube. So,
Yeah, you can learn anything on YouTube.
exactly. So maybe she figured it out on their, whatever their internet system is. I'm gonna need a hammer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
She was talking about replacing at one point, I guess, the window sills or the trimming around it on the outside. See,
Yeah.
I can't even remember what the name is. She's and I was like, how do you even like, I guess you have to pry off what was previously there and then hammer on some new wood.
Yeah.
But I mean, I couldn't look at a house and be like, I'm gonna refurbish this whole thing. It ended up being like one of the houses that you see that are flipped, where
Yeah.
like there's just a tangle of wires somewhere that's keeping the whole house. You have no idea what it's connected to, but if something happens, everything's gonna stop working.
Yeah. Tis worrisome. The her history though may have supported her in this too though, because they moved a lot. So they were continuously living in different places. She may have learned how to do home improvements just out of necessity based on the places that they were living in. Or maybe her father knew if they built this cabin together.
Yeah, maybe it was in his letter somewhere, or
How
yeah.
to replace a window. Dear Millie, or dear Ruala, you'll never get this letter. But if you do, when the window starts to blah, blah, blah.
I don't know. Somehow he gave her the information.
So let's dive into some of the angst in this story, just with some of the frustrating things about their relationship. I know the whole point of the story was this, but I got so anxious and frustrated in the beginning, at the start of their relationship with the flirting. Like, I know we had to have it, but Millie was flirting with Kythel, and Lizanna made her promise not to let him feed from her. And so she didn't, but they kissed each other in a really public location and got caught. And like, yeah, it was shitty of Lizanna to try to police Millie's actions, and her response with physical violence for slapping her was super inappropriate. But at the same time, Millie jeopardized her only source of income after repeatedly stating how much she needed money and being concerned about being homeless and getting her dad back to the planet. Like, did we not think, hey, kissing him is not feeding, but is probably also not great and potentially job threatening?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I know we had to have it, but at the time I was like, oh, this is a bad decision. You're gonna lose your job. And then Keitel, his ignorance here, he gets shocked and offers to go back and demand that Lizanna give Millie her job after he finds out that Millie was fired for kissing him and is now homeless because of their actions. I was just so annoyed by him. Like, really?
I thought she portrayed a wealthy person perfectly right there, because that is very much a entitled, 1% sort of thing to do, I guess.
100%. Yeah. He's like, I'll go back and make her give you your job back. Bro, no, she's not gonna, even if you do, it's not gonna be a great work environment. Do you really think that she's gonna be accepted back well after the Kaiser demands and she gets her job back?
Yeah,
No.
it's not like they have an HR department to mitigate any, workplace issues there.
Yeah.
Hostile work
Yeah. And
environment.
given how this story progresses, Millie might just happen to slip on a knife and gut herself. So,
It probably would have benefited them to keep her there and then have her accidentally, slip and fall onto a knife. Could have insured.
quote,
Right.
quote, accident. Yeah. Hey, yeah, they could have gotten some insurance money. Yeah.
This is just a question. Do you remember what that war, like the original war, was about, by any chance, that they're constantly referencing?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was about.
I don't know what they're fighting over.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been too long since I read the last book. We'll look it up the next time we talk about the next book in the series.
Yes, whenever it comes out.
There you go.
So going along with what you said, I was frustrated with her flirting as well, because she mentions repeatedly how badly she doesn't want to go back on the streets because she had a terrible time, right? She doesn't want to go back to that. So you would think that she would at least be subtle about it
Yeah.
if they're gonna flirt, but no, they like make out in front of the restaurant almost, like
Yeah. Could have done better with that. Millie says she's not used to having to hide her feelings. Maybe you should practice a little.
in the mirror.
Yeah. Not in the streets, right behind your workplace. I mean, they were right next to a forest. Go into the forest.
Right? Like just two trees deep. You don't even need to go two trees deep and turn. No, nobody's gonna see you.
Yeah. I do have a little complaint about this one. And it's how many times they mention how unattractive Millie is. Like, damn. Six or
Oh.
seven times. I highlighted it this time around because I remembered making notes to myself. Like, I got to the first one and I had made a note, like, do we have to do this? And then it happened six or seven times. And each time I'm like, okay, how ugly is she? Like, why? Because so these are the quotes. She was nothing special to look at. She was ugly and beguiling. And then Millie about herself says, I was no great beauty, but I liked myself. Like, okay. Why? Why do we have to bring this up so many times? Because it makes it sound like Millie's really unattractive.
It does.
I don't think I've ever read a book before where they talk about how unattractive the female main character is so many times.
No. I mean, it'll be mentioned maybe if it's, an alien romance.
Yeah.
There was one Ruby Dixon's where it's like, oh, she had like these describing eyebrows, these weird dark slashes above her eyes that made her face look ugly. But it was not repeated a whole bunch more times later.
Yeah.
Right? Like this kept even at the very end.
Even when he's in love
Even
with her.
the love brother, he makes some comment about her being like imperfect or something like that. And I was like, I mean, like, I get the sentiment, I guess. But like, really?
We're gonna keep on with this?
It's I should have taken a screenshot and just my note for you because it was this is really the last part of the book. Him
Millie's still
talking.
ugly.
Yeah, just in case the readers forgot.
Yep. Love doesn't cover up everything, so.
Oh. You know what it made me think of? I don't have you ever watched America's Next Top Model? Or you have, but not a ton, right?
Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
Okay. Tyra, to so many girls, would say that they're not pretty, but they're Vogue pretty. Like, they're not catalog pretty, but they're Vogue pretty because they would have like, she's like, you've got this, gigantic forehead that, leaves a lot of room for something. You've got these big jaw and big nose or something. Your wide set eyes and your lips that don't quite fit your face. You're not pretty. You're not conventionally attractive, but it's what photographers look for. That's what this made me think of. Was Tyra's like underhanded? You're really
Yeah.
ugly, but I'm gonna take your picture anyway.
Yeah, that show really did not age very well.
No, it was awful.
They mention wine in this story. So they talk about the tannins in the Davos wine that they have. And it reminded me of when we tried to drink fancy wine for the Discovery of Witches episode. And you got the one that had like blueberry and pencil shavings.
Yes. The pencil shavings.
Yeah, the tannins. Gonna let it breathe. Yeah. We should do another alcohol-inspired episode, I think.
We should.
That
That
was fun.
it was.
But not wine, because neither of us really like it.
Oh. Let's come up with something.
Oh, maybe we could make like a holiday cocktail because our next episode we're doing Christmas episode.
Oh yeah, like eggnog. I
Yeah.
make eggnog from scratch. I saw a
I'm proud of
recipe for
you.
it.
I'm not gonna make eggnog because I don't like it.
Okay, that's fair.
But you do that and I'll find a different holiday cocktail to make. So Millie has a friend, and her friend's name is Grace. And I really liked Grace. She was pretty honest about her feelings and was kind to Millie, and I think tried to be a good supportive friend to her. Also, she is like doing it for herself as an entrepreneur. So in the story, Millie finds Grace in a room with Brad, who is one of their clients. And it's very obvious that Grace and Brad are hooking up. And so she later finds out, because Grace tells her, that Grace is leaving. Brad and his wife both want to suck and have sex with. And so they offer to buy her a house and give her like a salary so that she can be a contracted, it sounds like, blood giver, which I love the idea of. I can't decide if this is more akin to sex work or if Grace is more like the unicorn in a triad type of relationship, but either way, it looks like we're doing some polyamory. I just really enjoyed this as an element in the story.
You do. And I like good for Grace. Got
Yeah.
under Lasana's thumb, you know, she didn't like for good reason. As we come to realize. And yeah, like she gets her house. They get her a house. I want a house. I was
Yeah.
up for this, please. Okay.
Yes, please take my blood
Yeah.
and give me orgasms and buy me a house as payment. Sure.
Yeah, this sounds like a great deal.
Win-win, everybody wins.
I felt like Millie was a little judgy about it.
I agree.
Okay, it wasn't just me. She's a little judgy there
Yeah.
for that.
Kind of came off that way, which I think is surprising because she seemed to be so open-minded about a lot of other stuff. Zoe Draven always writes great sex, so this book had great sex. I wish there was more of it. I feel like we didn't get as much as we usually do, or I don't know. It felt like there was less sex than is typical in her stories. Maybe not. That's just what I perceived. But Kythel has a knot, which I like as a penile adaptation. And I feel like you mostly read about knots with Wolf Shifter books, which, as we know, are the worst. So I like it when we get them in these stories. And I like them in theory too, because they sound amazing. Lots of pleasure that goes along with that. But like in real life, absolutely not. This would never work for me.
I agree.
Which is a bummer because when they have that, like the characters have them in these books, they have like a bajillion orgasms.
I know. Well, that's what makes it appealing, right? Is that it like
Yeah.
pops in there and it triggers more orgasms. But that's not how it would be in real life.
No.
You know that. It's gonna pop in there and it's gonna be like, oh,
Yeah.
this
And
is a lot.
I just feel very stretched. And then you're stuck together.
Yeah.
You cannot detach until the knot goes down.
Ugh. And you're supposed to pee after sex every time.
And this would make bad hookups a nightmare,
Oh,
right? Stuck
yeah.
together with someone you don't like.
Oh, how terrible.
Yeah, you would definitely only want to be knotted to someone that you were super into.
They do make sex toys that have knots on them.
Yeah. But that I have seen those. They have all kinds of sex toys that are adapted to different sorts of monster penises, which I think is super cool. Have you looked at the Bad Dragon website? I think it's called
Yeah.
Bad Dragon. Yeah. They have different like shapes and you can get different levels of flexibility. A lot of times you can pick the color you want. Love the customization options.
I agree with you that there seems to be less spice in this book than I think maybe in some of her other ones that we've read.
Yeah.
There's, but I enjoy the spice that we get.
Yeah.
Except for one scene. She's in a bathtub and the water is cold, and it's mentioned multiple times about it being cold, and it is the most unappealing sex scene for me.
Yeah.
I don't think they, I mean, even. I mean, he takes her out. Like, she never dries, or does he? He kind of dries her off, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is just not, it reminded me of the From Blood and Ash scene where they have sex in the snow. And the whole time I'm cold for them. I'm cold and uncomfortable for them.
Yeah.
This is not, it doesn't sound appealing.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like a good time. It is, we see Millie being the person who initiates sex several times in this book, though. And I feel like usually it is the male main character that's initiating sex in these stories. So, like that scene in the bathtub specifically, she is the one that is leading Kythel into the sexual encounter, right? She teases him. She leaves like a trail of her clothes. And I feel like she maybe initiates sex one other time. So
I think towards the end.
I think Millie's very confident in herself and her body most of the time, which is something that I really like to her about her. She tells Kythel at one point, she says, "I know who I am and I know who you are." She's a very skilled chef. She's traveled everywhere, which is, special or like unique just because he's like the Kaiser, he's the leader of this region, but he's not really had the opportunity to explore. She's very resilient as well. And so I think those are things, I think that as a character, she's pretty relatable, but then there's also these frustrating moments. And this is what I was talking about earlier. She starts to question her worth to Kythel because he only wants to feed from her for a month. And so I get her insecurity here. They mention several times that she's ugly, so, or unattractive. So maybe some of that does settle in, although she does talk about being very comfortable with how she looks and not being bothered by it initially when she was younger, but really leaning into it as she's gotten older. And so, like, it's obvious that Kythel cares for her and they've got really spectacular chemistry, and she definitely cares for him too. But she confronts him near the end of the book, you know, when they have one of their con they have conflict. She confronts him and about their relationship and the ending of their relationship, because it has been about a month. And in this confrontation, her conversation with him all goes back to her feeling like or believing that Kythel thinks that she's not enough for him. And I feel like she projects a lot of insecurity about herself and her life circumstances onto him in this moment. And I would have loved for that to be more of a, like, I know who I am and I'm awesome. And you're missing out because you don't see my worth, instead of, I think that you think I'm not worth being your partner.
That confrontation scene that they had towards, I guess, the end of that month. Oh, so awkward. And like, I don't know, I just cringed, I feel like, for her. And it was like angsty and embarrassing because Kythel had never indicated, you know, like he. And I feel like despite him never saying like there's going to be something more, like he never said that, he always stuck to the 1 month thing, she still expected it. And obviously they've got amazing chemistry and they're mates, right? So on one hand I can understand, but I feel like when she had that, you know, confrontation with him, it was, I don't want to say uncalled for. I mean, maybe, like, I don't feel like he led her on,
I don't either.
you know? Yeah.
I agree. I think that he was upfront with her from the beginning. He never said things to her like, I love you or I want to stay with you. I don't think he led her on. He didn't say things to her that would make things worse when they separated. I think it might have helped smooth things over a little bit if he had been early, like honest with her about like why they were only going to see each other for a month, instead of her believing that he was leaving her for Lyris of House Arata because she was beautiful and the better connection or whatever. Maybe saying like, I'm just doing this because we need resources. Maybe that could have helped some. I agree. Their confrontation was pretty cringy. There were two times. It was that conversation, and then there was another conversation that they had where she is basically talking badly about herself to him and projecting those feelings onto him. And he makes a comment where he says, "Have I ever said this to you? Have I ever said any of these things to you? I think you're tremendous and resilient and wonderful." So I think we see some of her insecurity coming through.
And she also configured, I don't remember exactly what the in his language what the word was, but I think it means like fallen star,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
He calls her that, and she interprets it one way, right? Like with a more
Right.
negative thing to it, and he, on the other hand, is calling her that for sweet
Mental
reasons.
resilience. Yeah. It's I think Sasserl. Yeah. So they split. It's pretty ugly. And then House Arata tries to get Millie killed. They set her cabin on fire. It's pretty bold. to kill your Kaiser's mate is pretty bold.
They weren't subtle about it.
No.
It wasn't even like, oh, maybe it's an accidental fire. They put bars on her windows.
They nailed it shut.
Or,
Yeah.
yeah, they nailed it shut, whatever. That was obviously somebody was going to look into that.
Yeah.
What? Like, at least make it look like an accident.
Yeah. Do better.
You're going to murder someone for political
A little
reasons.
more subtle.
Yeah. That's what it is. People lack subtlety in this book. Her
Yeah.
with her flirting, them with this attempt.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt bad for her because she had put so much work into restoring it.
Oh my gosh, I know. She had like just finished it. Right.
Yeah. How disappointing. Yeah. And her letters. I forgot that her letters were in a trunk. So I was reading it the second time. I was like, does she lose her father's letters? Because she still had that one that he wrote to her before he died that she's never read. And I couldn't remember if they got burned.
Oh, yeah. I know. Thank goodness she had it kept in basically a fireproof safe.
Yeah.
I do like Kaithers. Wait. Yeah, I like
I fell.
Kaithel. It's just so similar, all the terms.
Yeah.
Kaithers response to her getting, you know, almost burned to death, right? Where he goes into berserker mode and everything. I just love when the guy messes up and then the woman almost dies or something.
I
It does die.
know. I do too.
It's
Really make him hurt.
just really make me feel. And then I don't remember if this is a thought or if he says it to her, but it's something along the lines of, oh, you know, I didn't realize how much she meant to me until I almost lost her. I
Yeah.
was like, typical. But yeah, I love when, you know, it's so bad.
I don't know why we want men to suffer so badly.
It's so bad, but nope.
And he realizes like he can't live without her or doesn't want to live without her.
Yeah. And I like that she didn't just go back to him with like, oh yeah, okay, great, now you want me.
Yeah.
You know, she's and I think this might actually be part of another insecurity of hers, or she's concerned that she can't stand on her own because she was, you know, reliant on her father for a very long time. And then she mentioned she's concerned about that she's doing the same thing to Kaither. Kaithel, gosh, I don't know why I keep doing that. It's because Kaithel.
Yeah.
So when this all happens, she wants to either get her own place, which was the reason she was gonna, like, I guess, stay in an inn in the slums, it sounded like. And then Grace offered her a place to stay. So she was gonna stay away from Kaithel's keep and, you know, kind of settle in herself. So I liked that she was planning that, that she didn't just go running back immediately, anyway, obviously.
His response to it is pretty great too. Like he gives her the space to do that. He makes a guard, I think, stay, but he respects her desires and is supportive of her in the boundary that she wants to set, which is great.
So I guess it's like the basically the very end. Azur, his twin, right, comes to her while she's at Grace's and is basically asks her, are you going to forgive my brother or not? Because he's miserable, sort of. Right. And they have a little bit of a back and forth, and he's like, ah, I have my answer, because she was clearly going to take him back. And she just kind of leaves in what I think is the middle of the night, right?
Yeah.
And she's staying at somebody's house. Like, if I woke up and my guest was just gone, hadn't said anything, hadn't written me a note or anything, and they were just gone, I would be so worried.
Yeah.
No mention of if Grace is trying to like frantically find her. No
House
mention.
Sarada finally got her.
Right? Like, she was
almost killed.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So House Arada's actions do create a really nice way for Kythel to get what he wanted in the first place without having to marry Lyris.
Yes.
So because they try to kill Millie, he confronts, I think his name is Khan, the head of their house, and says, hey, so I interrogated Lysanna, Millie's boss, and your cousin, Hanno, and they threw you under the bus. So I can kill you, basically, or you can agree to sign over two of your mountains with all of this stuff, and we can call it good.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can murder you, I think. Is that how that went?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he still gets what he wants.
Worked out really well for him.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. They have a meeting in the middle of the story where Kythel and his brothers, they meet with Zaire, who is the leader of the Drakan, which I guess, again, is just like another tribe. Really need to go back and figure out more of the history of these people. But they make like a war bond. And Zaire, who is their leader, he asks about their sister, Kalia. And I feel like that got mentioned a little bit in the last book, too. So I'm wondering if the next story is going to be Kalia's story. Are we going to see like an arranged marriage type of situation between them or what? I feel like that's on the horizon at the very least.
I agree with you. I think so, yeah. And I'd like to see that a lot. I liked her. We got to see her briefly in the last book, right? They're super protective of her as the brothers, which is sweet.
Yeah.
So I definitely would like a book about her, or, you know, with her in it.
Okay. Well, until the next book in the series.
Yep.
This has been Craving in His Blood by Zoe Draven. Join us next time. We'll be discussing A Holly Jolly Mess by C.M. Nescosta. It is a Christmassy short novel. We love this author. It's set in her universe with like Morning Glory, Milking Farm, and Sweet Berries. I can't remember what that universe is called, but same world. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literaryquestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.